You're listening to WGXC,
ACRA,
Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. We're here for you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, Wavefarm's Emma Madigan will interview the owners of the new Red Star Cafe and Bakery on Main Street in Caro, Greene County. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
The news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air. In air. Waves. Controlled. On air. In air. Channel. Connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network.
Sunday, July 3rd, world-renowned harpist Mary Lattimore performs at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m., and you can find out all about the event on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Lattimore has played harp on records with Kurt Vile, Thurston Moore, Sharon Van Etten, Meg Baird, and many others, and comes from Los Angeles to Woodstock on Sunday, July 3rd at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Go to WGXC.org in the community calendar to find out more about this event and many others.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Henning's Local Test Kitchen in Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, July 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Lawrence Danforth reports for the Times Union that the Columbia County Health Department has announced that three of the county's COVID-19 patients died between July 1st and July 5th. They are the first deaths in the county linked to the virus in about a month. Columbia County Public Health Director Jack Mabb said that two of the patients were nursing home residents. He added that COVID-19 infection levels have been stable and are not an immediate concern, despite the recent deaths. As of July 6th, there were 12 COVID-19 patients hospitalized in Columbia County, with one in the intensive care unit. Hospitalizations are statewide at levels higher than the past two pandemic summers. However, it is difficult to immediately determine death trends, as the state often releases the numbers in batches, such as at after the end of weekends. For example, on July 6th, the state announced there were 56 COVID-19-linked deaths between July 2nd and July 5th. Quote, much like our other 149 deaths, the vast majority were elderly, unquote, Mabb said about the county residents who contracted coronavirus and died since 2020. He did say health officials are watching the spread of the new BA.5 Omicron subvariant closely as summer continues. But what I'm hearing is it's more contagious and maybe more virulent in terms of how potent it is, unquote, Mabb said. Quote, it's going to be interesting to watch in the fall when we get back indoors and kids get back in school, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Melanie Lukosovic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that officials in the town of Queemans are looking at implementing Code Red, a mass communication notification system that would send alerts to the town's residents. Troy Harper, director of government strategy for OnSolve, presented the program to the town council at its June 23rd meeting. Code Red is a tool that allows government agencies to manage their communications, sending out alerts for everything from public safety emergencies to local concert events, depending on what the resident has registered for. OnSolve has more than 10,000 client communities in all 50 states and territories in the U.S., and it is the company that sends out Amber Alerts when children are reported missing, Harper said. Other communities that use Code Red systems include Saugerties and the village of Cooksackie, among others. The cost to the town would be roughly $4,000 a year, Town Supervisor George McHugh said. The company does not sell the contact information and data it collects, Harper said. The system was first brought to McHugh's attention by the town's emergency management director, Bill Bruno. McHugh said it was a good way to reach more residents than through Facebook or other social media. Messages can go to either cell phones or landlines, and with a landline, a computerized voice would read the message to the recipient, Harper said. The town board has yet to make a decision on whether to implement Code Red or not. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. And William J. Kemble reports for the Daily Freeman that former Hudson School Administrator Stephen Spicer has been elected president of the Kingston School Board. Spicer was chosen over serving President James Shaughnessy on July 6th in a 7-2 vote. Shaughnessy has been a member of the board since 2006 and has served 5 non-consecutive years as president. Spicer served as the board's vice president for the past 2 years. He was unsuccessful in his bid for president last year. Spicer was first appointed to fill a board vacancy in February 2019, and 3 months later he won a full term. He was then reelected to a second full term in May. Spicer said the district needs to remedy the adverse effects of remote learning during the pandemic. Quote, our leading goal is serving the superintendent and his staff, the principals and the teacher toward closing the COVID learning gap, unquote, he said. Spicer said the major challenge lies mostly at the elementary and middle school level, adding that the high school graduation rate did increase in some demographic areas despite difficulties during the past 2 years. Spicer retired from the Hudson District in 2018 after 14 years of service. His job as principal of John L. Edwards Primary School was eliminated after that building was closed. Before serving in that role, he spent 7 years as the principal of Hudson High School from 2004 until 2011. Spicer has been a resident of Ulster County for more than 30 years. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hi, this is Michael Wilde inviting you to Mostly Singles. And if you like what you're hearing, you'll love this show. Rarefied music, premieres, and guests. It's different every time. And a podcast, too. Go to wgxc.org. Mostly Singles, every fourth Tuesday at 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 8th. Early morning temperatures range from 61 degrees in Medusa to 68 in Claremont. Soil is coming in at a comfortable 66 degrees. A calm day is in store with a hot afternoon. A high of 86 is expected at 4 p.m. Most of the afternoon will be lingering in the 80s. Overnight, temperatures fall to a cool but damp 63 degrees. Saturday will be sunny with a high of 82 with some relatively steady but gentle north winds. 55 degrees overnight takes us into a warm and sunny Sunday with a high of 80 degrees. Monday, still dry with a high of 88. Garden hoses will be active this weekend. Pollen levels for today will be medium with not much change happening over the weekend. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:03 a.m., then high tide at 10:02 a.m., low tide again at 5:09 p.m., and high tide once again at 10:53 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees. Now, that is for Friday. If you're listening to the repeat, broadcast on Saturday or Sunday. Here are the times for when the sandbar surfaces near the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. Now, these encompass low tide, but this range is when the soil, not just the vegetation you see on the island, pops up, when you can actually walk there. And when these times are active, that also means you got a good quarter to three-fourths of a mile of sand just 2 feet below the surface out in each direction from that island. So, if you're in a fast-moving watercraft, stick to the channel. Anywho, those times for when that soil will be present and available is on Saturday, 4:15 a.m. to 7:15 a.m. And then it happens again at 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Current that day will be average. On Sunday, the sandbar will appear from 5:30 a.m. to 8:20 a.m. And then it reappears again at 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. And on Sunday, the current will be stronger. Looking way up, we see a mid-latitude coronal hole is releasing plasma, due to arrive early next week. Solar wind speed is currently 418 kilometers per second at a chunky 15.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are due to a crack in our planetary magnetic field, currently worse than terrible. Frequencies between around 8 and 15 megahertz are actually closed at the time of this recording. Overnight, it should improve a bit, but do not get your hopes up. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level, again, due to that crack in the magnetic field. The current sunspot number is 88. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Get out there and enjoy the weekend, everybody.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elaine Shimono of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
Now let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
Thank you. reality of affordable housing is changing in New York, and advocates for renters' rights say it's time for an update. For years, affordable housing has been defined by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as 30% of a person's gross income, including utilities. But the combination of higher prices, recent inflation, and stagnant wages has been eroding this formula. Teresa Watson, housing justice organizer for the nonprofit Push Buffalo, thinks the definition is lacking because it doesn't account for people with different sources of income.
When we're talking about seniors, folks on fixed incomes, or people who get SSI, SSI checks come in at about $900 a month. That means if you're paying $300 in rent, which is almost impossible unless you've managed to win the Section 8 lottery, you're still supposed to live off of $600.
According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, 963,000 renter households, that's about 28% of renters in New York, are considered extremely low income. The coalition also estimates there's a deficit of more than 615,000 available homes in the state for lower income renters. Watson believes rather than using catch-all solutions such as low income housing tax credits for builders, there should be a national reinvestment in public housing, and that communities should look for more individualized solutions. She feels public housing is truly an affordable housing model, but the system needs a serious overhaul.
The disinvestment has not only made them unsafe and often unsanitary places to live, they haven't been kept up, they haven't been invested in, they've been stigmatized, they've been over-policed. But it is the only housing in our country that actually bases what somebody pays on what they make.
In particular, Watson says Western New York is seeing an affordability crisis as rents skyrocket. One issue she notes is that existing properties are often owned by out-of-town landlords who base rents on what they can get, not on the condition of the property. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Can I have a caramel cold brew with oat milk, please?
Sure. Do you want a smaller one?
Small. Thank you. Hello, I'm Em Madigan, Wave Farm's 2022 summer intern. Recently, I had the pleasure of meeting with Kim and Shahan Girigosian of Red Star Cafe to learn more about their business in Cairo, New York. In a beautifully renovated space on Main Street, Red Star is offering area residents and visitors alike sweet bakery treats and a wide array of rich caffeinated beverages. Stay tuned to hear about what brought Red Star to Cairo, its owners, and what it offers for the community. Red Star Cafe is located at 526 Main Street in Cairo, New York, and more information is available at redstarcafebakery.com. So to start, what brings you guys to Cairo and why did you decide to open this cafe?
Well, my father bought the house that we bought 12 years ago in 1968, and I've been coming up here my entire life. And when we started dating, Kimmy started coming up here with me, and she kind of fell in love with it, and we just decided that, you know, once we started having children, after our second kid, we decided not to buy, you know, get a bigger apartment in the city. We were like, let's just do this up here, and kind of like moved up full time 8 years ago. And then we worked in the film industry, and it was just so many hours, and we were always away from each other. So we decided that we just wanted to do something together, and we had interest in coffee and baking, and so we just were like, let's just do this. Like, let's try it out. We found this cool building, and we like decided to turn it into a coffee shop.
Good. I mean, that's nice. So what kind of specialty coffees and bakery goods do you offer here?
Good question. We have all of the espresso drinks that you can think of, and we can serve them hot or iced. And then we partnered with Irving Farm for our coffee, so it's just like the best coffee you can imagine. And we serve, our iced coffee is cold brew, so it's really smooth and it's delicious. And then we also partnered with Harney and Sons for our teas. So we have like a chai latte, and we have a ginger turmeric latte. And then we also get our ceremonial matcha from there. That's from them. So we do a really nice matcha latte.
Oh.
And then our baked goods is kind of a mixed bag. We bake a lot of it in-house, and then we outsource some of the things just to make sure that the pastry case is full.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just started taking on offering grab-and-go salads and yogurt parfaits and anything we can put in that cooler. Eventually, we'd like to have grab-and-go sandwiches, but we're not quite there yet.
So what's your favorite thing that you offer here?
Oh, good question. I really personally like the cold brew because I just feel like it's so smooth. You can have it with milk and sugar, but it doesn't even need it. It's just like really delicious. You can taste all the flavors within the coffee itself. That's my favorite drink.
I mean, I just like to get a good espresso drink, and I mm-hmm. feel like there wasn't anything close by. You have to either travel to Catskill or Leeds or Hudson to get a cup of coffee around here, and it's just something that I missed from just being around the city and just like being able to like go down the block and get a good cup of coffee.
Yeah, it was a big part of it is that we wanted to create a community space, because what we missed in Brooklyn was you could go get a really good cup of coffee anywhere and then you would bump into your friends and then the conversation starts, and it's just that social interaction and the community space that we really missed, and that's what we want to provide here. And it's wild because it was in our whole business plan to make it this space, and then to watch it unfold right in front of our eyes. It's magical.
Yeah, we've only been here for like 2 weeks, and we've already seen people come sitting having coffee, and then somebody will walk in the door and be like, I haven't seen you in 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wild, so.
And then like mom groups will meet up with kids here. It's like, it's happening right in front of us. Or people that don't even know each other will be sitting on the patio on a Saturday morning, and then they just find things in common and they're just making friends, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, that is cool. There definitely is a need for more places like this in this area. I'd say the main strip is pretty, not barren, but it's in need of some small businesses.
It's definitely
I would
barren.
Say.
Barren.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have a lot of really amazing small businesses right here on Main Street in Cairo that have been so supportive mm-hmm. of us since day one. They just all have come out and bought coffees and just to show their support, and we obviously all along have been supportive of them. It's a cool community.
So along that same thing, the local response has been really good here?
Very positive. Everyone is just like, I mean, we're offering something that I feel like everybody, especially after the pandemic, like a lot of people are lonely and they want a place to come and meet their friends or just be outside of their house. So I think a lot of people are genuinely excited about the space.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I feel like those are pretty much all my questions.
Cool.
Unless you have anything else to add about...
I guess I'd like to say that we do offer free Wi-Fi, so for anyone that wants to come and get some work done, it's usually kind of quiet. You can find a quiet space to do that, and we encourage it, and it's nice to have people around us while we're here working.
All right. Well, it was really nice meeting you. Thank you for doing this.
Nice to meet
you too. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You too.
from the 2021 album Dissension, Out of Our Constrictions. That was Joshua Abrams and the Natural Information Society with guest Evan Parker and the first part of that long-form record.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Wind power is among the clean energy sources propelling growth in Iowa's green jobs. Working Nation reports that Iowa currently has more than 13,000 green economy jobs, and several thousand more are expected in the next 5 years. Mac Heddens with Power Up Iowa says the state's push toward clean power has caught the attention of large-scale employers, such as Amazon.
The more renewable energy that Iowa has in its power mix, really the more attractive it becomes for some of those companies that prioritize sustainability.
People who have worked in fossil fuel sectors need to know what's coming and where they fit in, suggests Federation of Labor President Charlie Wishman. He wants to see more community conversations.
The market is moving in a certain way, and when we don't plan ahead, workers can suffer.
At the two-year mark, some federal agencies aren't moving fast enough to implement year-old anti-monopoly directives to reduce the disparity and unfair competition between small farmers and big ag, according to Joe Maxwell, president of the Farm Action and Open Markets Institute.
You don't balance that power structure, the farmer is still going to be abused in that system.
The USDA is getting the most heat for its failure to move faster with rulemaking for the Packers and Stockyards Act. The agency says it'll soon roll out another two proposed rules and is committed to vigorous enforcement of existing laws to promote competition. Maxwell isn't satisfied.
We felt very strongly that after a year, they should be further along.
The Institute does commend the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice for quick work clarifying product of USA labeling, ensuring farmers' rights to repair their own equipment, investigating more mergers, and starting work on new antitrust protections. Expansion of pre-pandemic school meals will be a summer lifeline for some kids. Daily Yonder journalist Sarah Malott says the benefits will provide at least 95 million meals.
It expands where meal sites are allowed to be. They're also allowed to pick up multiple meals at a time. They don't have to go back and forth every day. They can pick it up one time for a few days.
More than 1 in 10 urban households are estimated to be food insecure, and even more rural households. Summer is supposed to be a time when the living is easy, but stay cautious about ticks.
Generally, I go into every year thinking it's going to be a big year for ticks.
Tim McDermott with Ohio State University Extension says it's a myth that ticks only exist in the woods, and their numbers have been increasing each year for the past decade due to climate change, including species that can cause illness, such as Lyme disease.
I recommend you practice tick-safe behaviors, and they include things like wearing long pants and long sleeves.
To stay safe, a hat and tick repellent also are recommended. For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
Here's Dymaxion with some radio art. It starts with Chase Scene with Transistor Radio and leads into The Haunted Radio.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
That was Jury's Out from Joshua Redman.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, 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 really boring.
It would be about wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
Awesome.
All the way down.
The only dogs can hear.
Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. With so much bad democracy news lately, we're happy to share some good news from Massachusetts, where Republican Governor Charlie Baker has signed new legislation which expands early voting, expands voting by mail, and extends the voter registration deadline before an election. Massachusetts had previously limited early voting to the presidential and midterm elections, but has now expanded it to all elections. The new law also requires cities of 25,000 people or more to have Saturday and Sunday hours, and adds a week of early voting. Mail voting is also expanded. A portal will be created for Massachusetts voters to apply for early voting by mail with no excuse needed, allows for return by mail or Dropbox, requires accessible ballots for the disabled, and facilitates mail voting by eligible incarcerated voters. Voter registration deadlines have been moved closer to the election, ending at 5 p.m. 10 days prior versus the previous 20 days. It also adds voter registration documents in Spanish, Portuguese, and Chinese, and authorizes additional languages as necessary. Massachusetts already has automatic voter registration, which allows voter registration at the DMV and other agencies, but now allows someone to opt out by contacting the agency later. Convenient voting helps people exercise their freedom to vote and promotes participation in their democracy, a concept that all Americans should stand for. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.